News. I'm Victor Beatty. President Donald Trump says he misspoke during a joint news conference Monday with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, when he was asked about Russia's interference in the 2016 U.S. election.
In a key sentence in my remarks, I said the word would instead of wouldn't. The sentence should have been, I don't see any reason why I wouldn't or why it wouldn't be Russia.
Mr. Trump also underscored his support for the U.S. intelligence community, which concluded Russia did meddle in the election.
I have felt very strongly that while Russia's actions had no impact at all on the outcome of the election, let me be totally clear in saying that, and I've said this many times, I accept our intelligence community's conclusion that Russia's meddling in the 2016 election took place.
The criticism of Mr. Trump's performance in Helsinki continued to resound in Washington. Nancy Pelosi is the Democratic House Minority Leader.
Instead of standing up for our democracy and democratic principles, President Trump cowered in the presence of Putin, and the entire world watched and saw that.
Another Democratic lawmaker said Mr. Trump was trying to clean up the mess he made in Finland. Former U.S. President Barack Obama, in a speech in South Africa Tuesday, warned against what he called the politics of fear, resentment, and retrenchment.
I am not being alarmist. I am simply stating the facts. Look around. Strongman politics are ascendant, suddenly, whereby elections and some pretense of democracy are maintained, but those in power seek to undermine every institution or norm that gives democracy meaning.
Mr. Obama is speaking in Johannesburg, marking the 100th anniversary of the birth of Nelson Mandela. This is VOA News. Syrian civilians are fleeing toward the Israeli border to escape a Russian-backed regime offensive that's rolled back rebel control of land near the Jordanian border. The Syrian military released video footage of fighting for the village of Mashara. Thousands of Syrians have fled toward the Golan Heights, with the Israeli army warning people to stay away from minefields. Although not granting them asylum, Israel has cared for their medical needs. Meanwhile, opposition sources said rebels and Iranian-backed negotiators have reached a deal to evacuate thousands from two besieged Shia villages in the northwest in return for hundreds of jailed dissidents. Iran has filed a lawsuit against the U.S. and the World Court over President Donald Trump's order to reimpose sanctions lifted under the 2015 nuclear deal. Tehran is using a 1955 treaty as the basis for its suit. Hussein Binai is an Iran analyst at Indiana University.
I think it is an effort on the part of the Iranian government to submit to the diplomatic record as much of its grievances legally as possible. And I think it is meant to broadcast to the rest of the world that Iran is abiding by international treaties and diplomatic conventions and playing by the rules of the so-called international liberal order.
The Trump administration withdrew from the nuclear agreement in May, citing continued Iranian malign behavior. Rescuers operating off Libya's coast Tuesday discovered the bodies of a woman and small boy adrift in the Mediterranean. A second woman aboard the damaged dinghy was saved. The Spanish charity Proactiva Open Arms said the three were left helpless 80 nautical miles from Libya by the Libyan Coast Guard after the women refused to board their patrol vessel. Bereaved relatives held a solemn ceremony Tuesday marking the fourth anniversary of the downing of Malaysian Airlines MH17 over war-torn Ukraine. All 298 aboard perished when a Russian-made missile brought down the Boeing 777 en route from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur.
Now, trying to bring the perpetrators to court is very difficult because everybody knows that it was Russia involved. Proof is 100%, I would say, is watertight. But to get Putin or his military to admit that Russian soldiers were in Ukraine, that will never happen, I guess.
International prosecutors said they have unequivocal evidence of Russian involvement. In northern Afghanistan, Islamic State said it carried out an attack on the home of a Taliban commander, killing at least 15 people. It comes amid other reports of clashes between the two insurgent groups. Wall Street rallied Tuesday on good news and an upbeat assessment from the U.S. Central Bank chairman about the trajectory of the U.S. economy. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, and today is Wednesday, July the 18th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you this morning. Campaigns continue in Zimbabwe ahead of elections slated for the end of this month. It will be the first election without long-term ruler Robert Mugabe on the ballot. Yesterday, the man who ousted him in a much-publicized coup d'etat, President Emmerson Mnangagwa, took his election campaign to Chinyoye, Mugabe's hometown.
Zimbabwe again shall be a shining star on the continent. And for that to happen, it is ourselves, together, working together, peacefully, united as a people.
Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa and at least 15,000 South Africans gathered in a Johannesburg cricket stadium yesterday to hear former U.S. President Barack Obama deliver a speech on the eve of the 100th anniversary of the birth of anti-apartheid icon Nelson Mandela.
Madiba guided this nation through negotiation, painstakingly, reconciliation, its first fair and free elections. As we all witnessed the grace and the generosity with which he embraced former enemies.
Former U.S. President Barack Obama and the Tunisian parliament has approved a law to combat illicit enrichment. That law is meant to strengthen the government's fight against widespread corruption in the country. And in Burundi, the East African Community Council of Ministers, a policy organ of the community that comprises of the ministers responsible for the East African community, was supposed to meet this week in Bujumbura, but that meeting has been suspended for what they say is a lack of quorum. We'll have those stories and more coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. We begin in North Africa, Tunisia, where the parliament has approved a law to combat illicit enrichment. That law is designed to strengthen the government's fight against widespread corruption in the country. Analysts say that economic progress in the country has been slow due to corruption. The new law will force the president, ministers, senior officers, and many others working in the public sphere to declare their property. Tunisia's anti-corruption committee says graft is still widespread and threatens the country with billions of dollars a year in losses. Former U.S. President Barack Obama on Tuesday delivered the 16th Nelson Mandela annual lecture in Johannesburg. He argued people in South Africa and elsewhere to follow the late Nobel Peace Prize winner's example and combat the politics of fear and division. Tuto Kumalo reports for VOA.
In his speech, Obama bemoaned what he described as the returning of the old order of things. He said there is evidence of continued racism in both the U.S. and South Africa, despite Mandela's 67 years in confronting the issue. Turning to diminishing democracy in some parts of the world, Obama urged leaders to follow the example Mandela set.
Madiba guided this nation through negotiation, painstakingly, reconciliation, its first fair and free elections. As we all witnessed the grace and the generosity with which he embraced former enemies, the wisdom for him to step away from power once he felt his job was complete.
Obama said it was said that new wealth has compounded inequalities, with the captains of industry increasingly detached from the people around them. He also reflected on global events, saying America's interference in the Middle East and the growing influence of Russia and China were some of the worrying developments. Obama sounded a warning, saying the politics of fear, resentment, and retrenchment are growing stronger at a pace never seen before. However, he said all hope was not lost.
I believe in Nelson Mandela's vision. I believe in a vision of equality and justice and freedom and multiracial democracy, built on the premise that all people are created equal and they're endowed by our Creator.
Those present at the lecture applauded in ululation and cheers when Obama ended his speech. Godfrey Moketsi traveled 400 kilometers from the Limpopo province to Johannesburg to see and hear Obama speak.
Yeah, Obama is on point. Then He's been talking about the capitalists who are enriching themselves. They forget about the poor, and it's not the reflection of Madiba. Economic and radical transformation is what we want now, and Obama does those kind of things.
The other speakers of the day thanked Obama, saying he was a great inspiration to young people across the African continent. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Mr. Obama's speech was well received among thousands of young South Africans who attended the memorial lecture at a cricket stadium in Johannesburg. In his speech, Obama criticized populist movements toward authoritarianism around the world and mocked what he called an utter loss of shame among political leaders who lie. So how did the young people who attended the speech respond to the former U.S. president's remarks? Nadia Sami spoke to some of them right after the speech, and this is what they had to say.
This is an iconic day for South Africans to see Obama and making history. Today's history, and I'm glad to be here. Obama being actually the first black president, and also it was a reflection of South Africa having our first black president in 1994.
Because I think Obama is an inspiration for all of us. And he has been going around the world and trying to focus on freedom for black people.
Well, I think he'll still be a president because if I compare him with Nelson Mandela, I would still feel like they almost played the same role in a way. So I would really like to see him do this even more in all the countries in around the world. So it's actually a privilege to even be here and just be able to be part of this. So I'm really excited.
Well, this is a momentous occasion. First black president in the United States and first black president in South Africa. We are very proud of Nelson Mandela here because, among other things, we think that Barack Obama is modeling himself after Mandela. So we set a good example here. We're very proud of that.
He is inspirational and he's worldwide known. I think he has a lot to say about what Nelson Mandela has done and what can be done in the future. So I think it's important.
For me, the leadership that Obama exhibits, it's a leadership that is centered on hope. It's a leadership that is centered on service. You know, is a servant leader, and for him to deliver the 100th centenary Mandela lecture, the 16th one, it's significant because these are two leaders who have exhibited, you know, strength, who have exhibited criticism, who have made, you know, their nations, you know, to bring about change and hope. And for me, Obama is a dissident of Africa. Is putting a spotlight on Africa and renewing Africa's hope.
Those are young South Africans who attended former U.S. President Barack Obama's speech. Mr. Obama delivered the 16th Nelson Mandela annual lecture in Johannesburg, South Africa. And from South Africa, we go to Uganda, where members of parliament from both the ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, and the opposition are divided on the issue of accepting to take up security measures to protect high-profile members of the society. The Ugandan legislators say that security issue is a cross-cutting issue and should be provided not only for the high-ranked government officials, but for all citizens in the country. And for more on this, reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarenji files this report from Kampala, Uganda.
I don't need that car. What I need is that government think about the security of everybody. After all, when the president took oath, he took oath to protect the people and their property. So it is inconceivable that he can single out me as an individual and say, I am going to protect Paul Muiru because he's an MP. What about my wife, my children, and my people, and all Ugandans?
That is Forum for Democratic Change Member of Parliament, Paul Muiru, reacting to the president's security measures for the members of the parliament. President Yoweri Museveni directed the Minister of Finance to procure funds to buy escort cars for about 500 members of the Ugandan parliament. He said each member of the parliament will be provided with a lead car and an escort car to enable them to fully execute their work without fear for their lives. The president also directed that the army provide MPs with sharpshooters to protect them from what he termed as terrorists. Muiru says the new measures suggested by the president are uncalled for and costly for the government. Muir says parliamentarians should reject the proposal. Parliamentarian Paul Omiat Amoru cautiously supports President Museveni's security directive. He, however, says security should be selectively provided to members of the parliament that ask for it.
While the president has made this offer, I think the onus should be on every leader, every member of parliament, to report about their situation, if you feel threatened, if you feel not safe, because this is actually a constitutional provision for any Ugandan that you can write to the IGP and get support, security support.
Another member of parliament, Margaret Rwabushija, also says security for all Ugandans must be improved.
There are many other people who are affected and who are worried about insecurity. We lost a prosecutor. She was not a member of parliament. We lost a deputy IGP who was not a member of parliament. And many others. Yes, we are bothered. But do we have the money? The country, does it have the money at this very time?
Another member of parliament, Robina Nabanja, agrees.
We have just lost a member. We cannot take the members' lives for granted. If it were me as an individual, I would go for security.
A prominent member of parliament and a member of the ruling National Resistance Movement, Ibrahim Abiriga, was last month gunned down alongside his bodyguard by a non-silence at his home in Kampala. The president directive, the Minister of Finance for MP security, would cost Ugandan taxpayers more than 290 billion Ugandan shillings, or about $78 million. For VOA News, I am Mugume. Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
In Lusaka, some political drama as the only opposition member of the Lusaka City Council defects to the ruling party Patriotic Front, PF. The move by Mr. Brighton Bilumba, who was a member of the United Party for National Development, UPND, comes days ahead of the upcoming July 26 mayoral election. Announcing his defection from the United Party for National Development, UPND, Mr. Bilumba accused the main opposition party for lacking ideas and not being supportive of its grassroots. This after the Electoral Commission rejected the opposition party's call for the postponement of the vote due to what it says is ongoing politically motivated violence in the run-up to the poll. Analysts say that the defection could derail the UPND's hopes of winning the mayoral vote. And for reaction regarding the defection of the Lusaka councillor, VOA's Peter Cloti reached Charles Kakoma, spokesman for the Zambian opposition party.
Well, the UPND campaign is going on as planned. I think wherever we are going, we are having a good response from the residents of Lusaka. They are really geared to vote for us.
But I understand that the defection of the UPND councillor in Lusaka 10 days before the July 26th mayoral election could have a significant impact on the possibility of the UPND winning this particular election. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think that it will have no impact. Basically, that councillor was manipulated by the ruling party, the Patriotic Front, to protect. First of all, they charged him for stealing some funds in his ward where he was representing the people of Lusaka in Chawama. And after charging him and taking him to court for stealing money, then they intimidated him, blackmailed him to cross over so that his charges can be dropped. I think that story has now been well known by the people, so it will have no impact on the people's choice.
Well, some Patriotic Front supporters and some civil society groups are saying that because the UPND seem to see that it could be defeated in the election for the mayor on July 26, it has encouraged its supporters to engage in acts of violence to force the Electoral Commission of Zambia to postpone the election.
No, far from the truth. the violence that is being perpetuated in this election is coming from the Patriotic Front, the ruling party. We are the victims of that violence. In fact, just yesterday, they went to the extent of beating up people, including uprooting a borehole that was sunk by President Hakainde Hichilema of the UPND. And they tried to abduct some of our youth that were in the campaign and locked them up in the shop. Had to take the police to rescue them. So all these things are being done by the Patriotic Front. So far, they have not even produced any credible evidence of the UPND's engagement in any violent activities. So we are not worried about the forthcoming election. What we are just saying is that if the environment will be free, fair, and credible, we are going to carry the day. But we know that the Patriotic Front are planning to, in the next few days, up to election day, to resort to violence in order for them to win.
Charles, there are suggestions in Zambia that the UPND supporters appear to be disillusioned and undecided, and that some members of parliament and remnant in UPND might be waiting to cross over to PF. That, they said, is an indication that the UPND is imploding. Is that the case?
Well, I doubt seriously that that is the case. In any case, the current constitution now is that if a member of parliament crosses to another party, he will not be allowed to stand again in a by-election. So I doubt that anybody can take that risk. It is just a mere speculation.
Mr. Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for the Zambian Opposition Party. He was speaking to VOA's Peter Clotty from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. And from Zambia, we go to neighboring Zimbabwe, where President Emmerson Mnangagwa took his election campaign to the hometown of former longtime ruler Robert Mugabe. At a campaign rally for the upcoming elections, Mr. Mnangagwa appealed for unity in the ruling party before the July 30th general election. And as Sebastian Mofu reports from Mugabe's hometown of Chinoyi, Mr. Mugabe did not attend the rally and in fact has been completely absent from the campaign.
In slightly more than an hour-long speech, President Emmerson Mnangagwa did not mention his predecessor, Robert Mugabe. That was surprising only in the fact that Chinoyi, located 120 kilometers northwest of Harare, is Mugabe's hometown. Mnangagwa took power last November after the military forced Mugabe to step down after 37 years in power. Since his ouster, Mugabe has largely remained out of the public eye, except for one time when he gave an interview to some foreign journalist at his home and said Mnangagwa had taken power through a coup. On Tuesday, Mnangagwa predicted that good times are ahead only if the country stays under ZANU-PF's rule.
Zimbabwe becomes a new jewel, a jewel of Africa, where everybody shall rush to Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe again shall be a shining star on the continent. And for that to happen, it is ourselves together, working together, peacefully, united as a people, but under the banner of ZANU-PF.
He also said ZANU-PF wants a peaceful, transparent, and credible election. That would be a sharp contrast to Mugabe, who Western governments and human rights groups accused of rigging multiple elections through ballot box manipulation and violence. The opposition says more rigging may be in store. On Tuesday, Mnangagwa's main opponent, Nelson Chamisa of the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance, said the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission has yet to furnish his party with the voters' roll, a copy of the election ballot, or even the type of ballot paper to be used in the July 30th election. He said the party will take up these matters with the Southern African Development Community.
In fact, we are writing to SADC to request an extraordinary summit of SADC to then deal with this stalemate and this dispute. We have a dispute, we have a stalemate, we have a crisis. We cannot possibly have an election if we do not know where the ballot paper is, where is printed the ballot paper.
On Monday, the chairperson of the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, Priscilla Chigumba, said the issues the opposition is raising were now water under the bridge. The impasse might be setting a tone for another disputed election, the kind Zimbabwe saw all too often under Mugabe's rule. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Chinoyi, Zimbabwe.
The East African Community Council of Ministers, a policy organ of the community that comprises of the ministers responsible for East African Community and regional cooperation of each partner state, was supposed to meet this week in Burundi's capital, Bujumbura. But the meeting has been called off due to a lack of quorum, as ministers from South Sudan and Rwanda couldn't attend the meeting. South Sudan's government said that it couldn't attend due to the peace process back in the country. However, Rwanda's absence added up to the already strained diplomatic relations with its neighbor. For more on this story, Moses Havyarimana reports from Burundi's capital, Bujumbura.
The ministerial session of the 28th meeting of the Sectoral Council of Ministers responsible for the East African Community Affairs was called off in Bujumbura due to lack of quorum. The rules of procedure for the Council of Ministers provide that the quorum of the meeting of the Council of Ministers is all partner states' representation. Despite all member state officials being present at the permanent secretary's level and the lower level, only four ministers out of the six member states were available for the Council of Ministers meeting. Isabel Nahayo is the Burundi East African Community Minister.
Only the problem happened at the ministerial level, where ministers were supposed to attend themselves in the meeting. And then there was two countries which were not represented by ministers. And then we decided now to suspend the meeting until the quorum is there. For South Sudan, we were told that they had other more important engagement.
Since 2015, when political crisis erupted, it was the first time that Burundi organized an East African Community Council of Ministers meeting. The absence of Rwanda comes by no surprise, as officials from Burundi and Rwanda boycotted any event that is hosted by either state, citing insecurity. Olivier Nduhungirehe is the Rwandan East African Community Minister.
Yes, we sent our charge d'affaires in Bujumbura to attend that meeting because I had a very heavy agenda during this month of July. And I did inform the ESC authorities, the ESC secretariat, that I could not be available. I clearly indicated that I could not attend that meeting. We sent a chargé d'affaires now over our embassy in Bujumbura, who attend the meeting of senior officers and the permanent secretary.
Burundi and Rwanda relation has continued to deteriorate since 2015, when President Pierre Nkurunziza vied for another term in the office. Rwanda accuses Burundi of sheltering the FDLR rebels, who are accused of committing the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi. In return, Burundi accused Rwanda of militarily training the refugees to oust the current regime. Burundi ESC Minister Isabel Nahayo declined to comment whether Rwanda's absence is as a result of the deteriorating relationship between the two countries.
Yeah, there was a lot of issues to deal pertaining to the integration process, including the kind of activities for this current financial year. Of course, it is a loss for the region because Burundi is part of the region. When the community loses, Burundi is part of it. No specific issue to deal with Burundi. It was just the issue pertaining to the whole community.
The call of meeting was scheduled to consider several items pertaining to deepening and widening the regional integration agenda. The deteriorating relation between Burundi and Rwanda remains a major concern for the region's peace and stability. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
And that's it for this Wednesday, July the 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Cloti and Ricky Shryok, I'm Jackson Mvunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good day, Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the upset-filled 2018 FIFA World Cup wraps up on Sunday. All five of the teams from Africa, Nigeria, Egypt, Senegal, Morocco and Tunisia were knocked out in the preliminary rounds. A discussion on the World Cup on Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.